a spark, a seed, a drop, a single tiny movement that causes the earth to shake, a blaze to ignite, a life to begin. It all starts small, barely noticeable. It takes time, it takes patience. It takes an action, a movement, a change in thought, a catalyst that sets in motion what you never thought possible because you believed it not to be true. But because of that small work, thought, word, habit, the biggest difference began to take shape. And so, it became.
Well, good morning. My name is Josh Miller. I'm an elder here at Friendship Church. It's an honor and privilege to speak with you guys today. Our senior pastor, Dave Crandall, and his family are currently on vacation. For those of you that might be jealous, they did go north, not south. So they're enjoying the cold just like we are. We are in our current series called Small Things, Big Difference. We've been talking about how it's the small things that make the big things happen. It's the small things no one sees that results in the big things everyone wants. Last week, Andy talked to us about our thoughts, that internal conversation we have with ourselves that direct our behavior. Today, I'm going to talk to you about the external conversation, your words. Those thousands of words that we use on a daily basis, often without thought or carelessly thrown around. Those words have great power. Those have immeasurable power. If you've ever opened the Bible and you start at the very beginning, you turn to Genesis. In Genesis, it starts with God speaking everything into creation, from light to earth to stars to plants to animals, even to you and I. It was all spoke into creation. All the majesty that's laid before you was generated through the power of words. So I want you to think for a moment of the greatest thing currently in your life. Maybe that's seeing Tom Brady get sacked this afternoon and thrown to the ground. Yeah? Maybe if you're a Mets fan, it was watching the Cubs lose last night, which was very disappointing to me. Maybe it's, going down south, having the sand in your toes, a drink in your hand. I'm not going to sing the song. I cannot sing. Don't ask me to sing. Okay? Maybe it's, spending time with your kids. Who knows what it is except for you? But those great things, the great things in our lives, those things that we could sometimes only imagine, are created by words that God spoke. In Proverbs 18:21, it goes as far as to say, the wisest man who ever lived said, the tongue has the power of life and death, and those who love it will eat its fruit. The power of life, creation, making up, refreshing, building up, death, destruction, devastation, tearing down. Our words have both the power of life and death. And I think we can all relate to the fact it does, because in today's society, we do use words for the power of life and death, for building up and tearing down, but often it's for building ourselves up and for tearing others down. Those words that we carelessly throw around to have that negative impact, that devastation, that destruction. So that leads me to the big idea today. So if you get nothing else today, please get this. Small changes in the words we speak create a big impact in the lives we live. Small changes in the words we speak create a big impact in the lives we live. In James 3:3-5, it says, when we put bits into the mouths of horses to make them obey us, we can turn the whole animal. It used to be that we used horses for everything. from going from one ocean to the other across the country, to delivering mail, to churning butter, to making and doing all of our farming. We did all of that with a small bit in its mouth. Small things, big difference. You continue reading, it says, or take ships as an example. Although they are so large and are driven by strong winds, they are steered by a very small rudder wherever the pilot wants to go. We use ships to cross entire oceans. We use ships to deliver just about everything from China to here, because for some reason it's cheaper. We use ships for everything, and they're controlled by a small rudder. Small things, big difference. If you continue, it says, likewise, the tongue is a small part of the body, but it makes great boasts. And the New Living Translation, it says, makes great speeches. If you think of the speeches in history, right, and the great things that have come from those, I mean, speeches technically ended slavery. Speeches allowed us to get to the moon. Some of the more recent speeches have created the iPhone, the thing that we can't live without these days, right? Our words have the power of life. If you continue, it says, however, consider when a great forest is set on a fire by a small spark. So again, we have the power of life building up and destruction, devastation, and death. That small spark, right, that we say that can tear everything down, starts a fire. I don't know if you've been paying attention to the news or not lately, but actually this is one of the worst years on record over the last several decades for forest fires. We've actually lost over 11 million acres in the United States alone due to fires. Now, some of those fires are still going on. There are 7 actual large fires, and to be considered a large fire, you have to be currently kind of executing, killing off, destroying at least 100,000 acres at one time. That is a huge fire. And to give you the intensity or the amount of destruction and devastation that a fire can create, a forest fire that is, a small fire that's about 3 feet tall, if you've ever met Dave's wife Tracy, it's just a little bit shorter than her. Sorry, she's not here to defend herself, so Tracy, I apologize. It's actually hotter. It's as hot as or more, about 1,200 degrees Fahrenheit. So if you're going to go home today and you're looking forward to watching the game tonight, you're probably going to throw some wings in the oven, maybe some ribs, maybe a chicken. I don't know. If you're having a party, I know somebody who likes food. Okay, it's me. You're going to cook those somewhere between 350 and 400 degrees Fahrenheit. The smallest forest fire is at least 4 times hotter than that. The large forest fires, the 7 in which that are currently destroying most of the acreage we have out west, they're normally about 160 feet high in terms of flames. That's at least 15 stories. So if you're from the Indianapolis area like I am, that is taller than 95% of the buildings that are out there. There's maybe 5 that are taller than that. Its temperature reaches 2,200 degrees Fahrenheit. If you have one of those awesome cast iron pots where you make really good food in, again, I know somebody who likes food, if you throw that into the fire, it would melt. It's beyond the melting point of cast iron. So why are we having these fires? Why is this happening now? Well, it has a lot to do with the conditions. The conditions currently in the West are perfect. There are 3 things that you need for fire to happen. 1, you need a spark. 2, you need something to burn, you need fuel, which right now it's dry, there's lots of wood, there's lots of forest out there to burn. And 3, you need oxygen. We're all breathing today, correct? Yes, so there's lots of oxygen on the earth. So there's 3 things. So all it takes right now is a small spark in those perfect conditions to get everything going. If you start to think about the amount of destruction and devastation that one could have, the homes that are lost, you know, the forests that are knocked down, the possessions that are ruined, and in essence, the memories are lost, all because of one small spark one misstep, and 1 second without focus. This is very much like our conversations, the day-to-day discussions that we have. If the conditions are right, we can start a fire. The fuel being our words that we choose to use. The spark could be, I don't know, you could have had a really bad experience at work, had a really tough day. Maybe you were driving home and for some reason the state of Indiana decided to put construction in a new location that you weren't expecting. Maybe you chose to go in the left lane instead of the right lane. I don't know. Maybe you were having a discussion and you thought you put something funny out there that was really ill-placed. Maybe you thought you could kind of get out in front of things and talk about how awesome you are, and your ego writes a check you can't cash. All of these different things can spark what becomes a great fire. What's very interesting is I find that where these moments normally occur is not necessarily in the workplace or on the drive home or, you know, in the different areas we go to, but normally it's in our own homes. It's in those places where the environment is perfect. Everybody is trusting. Everybody is loving. Everybody's let their guard down. Everybody's open at that point in time. And I have a 2-year-old and a 4-year-old, both girls. So I know that at any moment something can spark. Whether it be not wanting to eat the food that was made, or throwing a book at her sister, or who knows what. But it results in this destructive behavior that is somewhat demoralizing on both sides. This is the same for us. The way we typically use our words is to build ourselves up and to tear others down. We often start this destruction in our own homes in that perfect condition. It's that unexpected shot towards someone that has done nothing wrong that leads towards destruction or demoralization of that person, especially when it comes to our own children, or our wife, or our husband. So today I want to give you 3 small changes that we can make in the words we speak to make a positive impact in the lives we live, in our lives, and the lives around us. The first one, as many of you will know, if you don't have anything nice to say, shut up. All right? My mama used to say, if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all. That was too long to fit on the sheet. So shut up. All right? Be quiet. All right? If you jump into Proverbs 15:28, it says, the heart of the righteous weighs its answers, but the mouth of the wicked gushes evil. The righteous, those that know God. You could actually replace righteous with Christians. The heart of the Christian weighs its answers, but the mouth of the wicked gushes evil. We're to be like Christ. Have you ever tried to put out a fire by throwing fuel on it? I actually did this once, incidentally. We were having a bonfire out here, actually, next to the church. You notice nothing's burned down, okay? It was for a riot at the time, and we had 2 barrels, and I still don't know why this was, but there was a container of water and a container of gasoline, and they were right next to each other. Don't ask me why they were next to each other, why they looked the same, or why it was dark when I tried to put it on, but I did. And I picked it up, and I threw it on the fire, and it, right? Not the reaction I was expecting, right? This is the same reaction we get when we respond with negative words. We throw fuel onto the fire. We ignite, right, what is about to happen. Those negative words, those zingers that come out, those opportunities where we could just slip something in and build ourselves up, tear somebody down, all that does is throw fuel on the fire. What I find is very interesting is that when they're fighting these forest fires, one of the common methods that they do is they dig a trench that's about 20 feet wide, about 10 feet deep, and it stretches the line of the fire. They add water to it, but they also typically add chemicals that help more or less prevent the oxygen from capturing the fire. And, excuse me, in essence, what they're doing is they're preventing the fire from reaching the next set of fuel. They're cutting it off. They're stopping it. We can do the same thing by essentially shutting up, not saying anything. One tip I can give you is, have you ever tried to bite your tongue and say something? We're all going to try this in a moment. My daughter, Clara, who's 4, she says stupid is a mean word, okay? And apparently Daddy uses stupid a lot, especially whenever the Colts play. Or like when IU played Rutgers yesterday, but stupid ref, stupid coach, all these different things, right? So we're going to try to say stupid, but we're going to try to do it while biting our tongue. You ready? All right, here we go. Right? Nothing comes out, right? There's nothing harmful that comes out. As a matter of fact, we probably look a little silly doing it, right? And if you've got something really good to say, you got a really good zinger, bite your tongue harder. It might remind you how hurtful the things are that you're about to say. Now, don't get crazy and cause it to bleed or anything like that. No self-harm, no self-destruction here, okay? But if you bite your tongue, you can help prevent the fire from growing. In Proverbs 17:28, it says, "Even fools are thought wise if they kept silent, and discerning if they hold their tongues." You ever heard the phrase, silence is golden? You can be golden if you just shut up. If you don't say anything mean, if you don't go at somebody, if you don't try to build yourself up, if you don't try to attack somebody when they're weak, you can actually look wise. It's amazing. In Ephesians 4:29a, it says, "Do not let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouth." Do not let any, now does it say some, say a little, any, every, nothing, everything that comes out of your mouth should be wholesome. And it goes on to say, "But only what is helpful for building up others according to their needs, that it may benefit those who listen." Which brings me to my second thing. So first was, if you don't have anything nice to say, shut up. Two is, if you have something nice to say, speak up. Speak up. God has given us all a voice, right? We all have an opportunity to speak. And if you can't speak, hopefully He's given you the opportunity to write. And if you can't write, hopefully He's given you the opportunity to use your eye to communicate to a computer that types things out. Either way, words will come out of you in some way, form, or fashion. God has given us that ability. Have you ever gotten a compliment from someone? You know, you're like, "Hey, you look good today." It's like, "Yeah, I look good today. What's up, man? I know I look good today. That's right. That's right." Some of you are like, "Hey, you did a good job." You're like, "Yeah, I did a good job. I'm awesome. You see that work I did? I put that in. I'm awesome. That is good." You're building them up. You know, you're making that chest stick out, pulling that stomach in, and that walk on. You know what I mean? You feel good, right? In Proverbs 16:24, it says, "Gracious words are a honeycomb, sweet to the soul and healing to the bones." You can't go any deeper than the soul and the bones. Those gracious words penetrate right through you to make you wonderful and sweet and nice. What most people don't realize is honey is one of the most used natural resources that we have today. And back then, it was one of the greatest natural elements when it came to healing power, when it came to making things taste good, when it came to using different products. Today, we use it in everything, from lip balm, to lip gloss, to suntan lotion, to food, to, you know, all the different stuff, all the chemicals we use. Almost all of them have honey in it. So if we reread this verse, but instead of saying honeycomb, we say most powerful element. So gracious words are the most powerful element, sweet to the soul and healing to the bones. I think it's unmeasurable the power and impact that our words can have. So don't ever hold a blessing back. Don't ever hold a blessing back. In 1 Thessalonians 5:11, it says, "Therefore encourage one another and build each other up." Encourage one another and build each other up. I'll tell you a personal story right now. When I was in high school, I played football, and we had a defensive coach that gave out an award each game. Friday night we'd play the game, Saturday we'd come in, we'd watch film, and then he'd give out awards at the end. The award he gave out was the Send Me Award. And we got this really cool t-shirt, basic t-shirt said Send Me on it. The award didn't say Most Valuable Player, it didn't say Defensive Player of the Game, it said Send Me. And it was for Isaiah 6:8, which said, "And then the voice of the Lord said, Whom shall I send, and who will go for us? Then said I, Send me." And I took that verse, that quote, to heart. That's how I lived my life from then and basically until now. I said, whenever there was a challenge in front of me, whenever something was about to happen, I said, Send me. It started when I was in high school, and there was this beautiful girl who sat in front of me in trigonometry class who was way out of my league and only asked me questions because I knew math. For those of you that love math, just another reason to love math, you know. That's right. Her name is Melissa. She's my wife. She's sitting over here now. So that small change led to me finding my wife, to having the courage to speak up, to making a decision on where I wanted to go to college, what I wanted to do. I had many opportunities, but I chose to be an engineer. I chose, as a matter of fact, to be an aeronautical mechanical engineer, which meant I liked things that went in space and planes and stuff. Okay? I was able to take that, say, send me, do the hard work. God, I will do this. And now I work in a great team with great people that work for me in a great environment at a company that I love. To a point where I didn't grow up in church. I didn't know church. I didn't know what it meant to experience God's love. I didn't know what it meant to feel God reside in your heart and make a difference. I didn't know who Jesus Christ was. I knew of God, but I didn't know who God was. When we came to church, we were starting to learn these things, we were starting to make a difference. Dave came forward and said, "We have this student ministry. My daughters are about to come in it, and I don't want to affect our relationship. It matters more to me, our relationship, than it does necessarily to keep this ministry alive. But I want somebody to step in and continue this." So I said, "Send me." I said, so my wife and I, we stepped in, we said, "Let's do this." We started with four people, four teens. We cheated, okay? Two of them were the Crandalls, right? You got Georgia, Caitlin. That's half of our attendance was two. Then it was the Killies, right? We had two of those. One of them was AJ. He wasn't even really old enough to be in there, right? So the only person who really showed up who wasn't necessarily forced to be there, I'm sure if you asked Crystal, she would say that she was forced to be there, was just one, which was Stephanie. So we started with four, and we said, "Send us. Let's make a difference. Let's see what we can do. Let God work in us." And as a result of that, we grew that ministry into what's now Riot and Ignite, and we did the great thing, the very difficult thing of handing those off to both Jim and Blake, and now they're averaging over 40 students on a given week, which is just incredible. All because one guy decided to change the name of an award from whatever it was going to be to Send Me. You also can have that same impact in somebody else's life. The small change, the encouragement that you make, can allow them to progress their lives in a way that glorifies God. We all have been given a voice. We all have the ability to say something. One simple thing you say can alter the person's life, whether it's good or it's bad. And that brings me to my third point. So my mama used to say, if you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all. And she also said, if you, it's not how you say it, but it's what you say, right? Or it's nothing wrong. It's not what you say, it's how you said it. See, I can't even get words right today. Okay? And so that brings me to my third point, which is, in whatever you say, look up. In whatever you say, look up. Don't look to yourself. Don't try to build yourself up. Don't try to tear down others. Don't jump into the moment and say, this is going to be really funny and I'm going to say something. Instead, look up. Focus on the love and less on the constructive. What better way to do this than to be like Christ? So I'm going to give you a little background here. We're going to be in John chapter 8. So Jesus is about to speak to a large group of basically a congregation of believers. There's hundreds of people here. And just as he's about to speak, basically the doors burst open. The Pharisees come all the way up to the stage, dragging a woman behind them. They set the woman in the front of the stage, and they turn towards Jesus in a hope to trick him, to bring him down, to build themselves up, and say, "This woman has committed adultery. By the law of Moses, we should stone her. What do you say, Jesus?" These men were so focused on themselves and what they felt was right, and the rules that they had followed, the rules that they had created, that they did not see the love and who Jesus was. They, in essence, were trying to tear him down and build him up. I want to take you for a moment, but put you in the woman's shoes. So you've committed sin. We've all committed sin. Again, I have a 2- and a 4-year-old. We've all committed sin at one point or another, whether it was pride, whether it was hitting, whether it was mean intent, where none of us are blameless. Okay? She commits sin, she's brought in front of everybody, and she's basically told, you know, her thoughts, her negativity, the things that she's hidden are spoken to everybody that's there. Hundreds of people. That had to be embarrassing. That had to be demoralizing. That had to be destructive to her pride. I mean, that literally had to just eat her from the inside out. It had to be like death. What I think is amazing is Jesus ignores them. Remember, the first point was, you don't have anything nice to say, don't say anything at all. So he ignores them, he bends down, he starts to write in the ground. It never says what he wrote in the ground. I wish I knew what he wrote in the ground, but it doesn't say. I'm thinking at that time his full man is probably in full rage, and his full God side is probably trying to calm down the full man side, saying, no, don't say this, no, don't tackle them, no, don't, you know, blast them with lightning, don't do any of those kinds of things, right? And they continue to, shall we say, poke at the bear. They continue to provoke Jesus. They continue to try to get him to say something in hopes of tricking him. And Jesus instead stands up and says, "Let any one of you who is without sin be the first to throw a stone at her." Let any one of you who is without sin to be the first one to throw a stone at her. You heard that whole, you point one finger at somebody, there's 3 fingers pointing back at yourself? Yeah. None of us are blameless. We're all full of sin. So instead of judging, instead of tearing down, instead of going through what our society would like us to do and building ourselves up, instead, we should show love and kindness. Instead of throwing stones, maybe we should rethink our words. What I think is amazing is Jesus goes back to writing on the ground, and everyone leaves because he says, "Let anyone throw a stone at her who's blameless." Well, everyone leaves. It's just woman and the Jesus. Just woman and Jesus left. If you're the woman, you're just like, "What just happened? This is awesome. Am I getting stoned today? This is really cool." Right? And Jesus turns to her. It's in John 8:10, it says, Jesus straightened up and asked her, "Woman, where are they? Has no one condemned you?" She says, "No one, sir." He replies, "Then neither do I condemn you. Go now and leave your life of sin. Be without sin." This is the response that Jesus calls us to give. Not to throw a zinger in, not to attack others, not to tear others down, but to show love and kindness, to show grace, to be understanding, to realize that we ourselves are sinners, to realize that our words are powerful. If we are able to act like Christ, we can avoid the forest fire and instead represent the eternal flame. In Ephesians 4:15, it says, "Instead, speaking the truth in love, we will grow to become in every respect the mature body of Him who is the head, that is Christ." As a church, we are the body of Christ. Okay, not the building, but us as individuals. As when we come together as a group of believers, we are the body of Christ. It says here that if we are to be mature like Him, we should speak the truth and love. So that's my challenge to you guys today. As a whole church body, as individuals, to speak the truth in love. So, do your words reflect Christ, as shown previously? We can avoid the forest fire and become the eternal flame if you choose the right words. Small changes in the words we speak create a big impact in the lives we live. So what was your one thing? What was your one verse? A couple weeks ago, Dave came up here and challenged everybody to have that. The words of God are very powerful. That verse can change your life in the way that it's changed mine. What's your one thing? Do your words reflect Christ? Does that one thing show love to Christ? How are you going to react and how are you going to move forward? As mentioned, words are powerful. Will you choose your words to start a fire or show light to the world? Because the small things make the big things.